This is Courtney Gray, Life and Body Coach. It is my pleasure to welcome you to another episode of the Road to Rediscovery podcast with Aubrey Johnson. Happy listening.
Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on the Road to Rediscovery. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them, and of course, pay it forward and uplift others who are struggling through dark times. As you've heard in countless previous episodes, this show takes deep dives into the darkest days, struggles, adversities, and transformations, and so much more. And at times, I know it can seem pretty heavy. It can sound pretty heavy, but it's quite necessary for helping others and giving people a sense of hope. It's truly, truly important. However, for a lighter, more spirited conversation, I want to personally invite you to subscribe to our sister podcast, Talking in Threes. That's right. We are talking about three of our favorite anything, countless topics, anywhere from sports to pizza toppings, to movies, TV shows, animals, and so much more. I invite you to share your three favorites as well. And to be a part of it, just join our public Facebook group and subscribe to the podcast. I'll leave the links for both in the episode show notes. All right. My special guest is a public speaker, author, and a licensed psychotherapist. Her expertise lies in helping her clients externalizing feelings they're ashamed to exhibit, at least in public. They are serious virtues. There's so much serious virtues to this that we're going to unpack. I'm very excited about this. But her awesome work has successfully helped people break free of depression, anxiety, bipolar, and more. Let's welcome Bronwyn Schweigert to the show. Bronwyn, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you here.
Thank you, Aubrey. I hope I don't disappoint. Man, that was quite a lead-in.
Oh, no, we are thrilled to have you. We truly are. So, all right, we have a lot to unpack. I am truly excited about this because, well, I have selfish reasons as well. You know, I mean, we're all human. We have our behaviors, right? But for the benefit of the listeners as well, because we are truly emotional beings, right? Mm-hmm. And so, not quite sure if my first question is going to make sense here, but I'm going to try to break it down. I guess my initial question would be, in your experience with your clients, has there been, or what was the initial issue or cause, for a client to visit you or to begin, talking with you? Is it related to relationships or behavior or, before any diagnosis is made of depression or bipolar?
Okay. That's a good question, actually. So most of my clients come to me because they're struggling with anxiety and they feel a lot of anxiety. Mm-hmm. I would say the majority of them have felt anxiety like chronically their whole lives, but now it's up to a notch that is not workable anymore for them. But that said, it's always rooted in relational issues. Sometimes they don't know that. Sometimes they're like, what can I do about my anxiety? And I'm like, well, it sounds like it's, you know, your mother or your partner. And they're like, oh yeah, that's not going to change. But what can I do about me? How can I, you know, turn myself more and more into a pretzel?
Yeah.
I can be happy and they can be happy.
Yes.
And, you know, eventually they come to see like, well, that's just actually not possible. So, because most of the people who seek out therapy, are people who are willing to change, and they're a self-selective group because not everyone would come to a therapist and not everyone is willing to change. Not everyone is willing to even acknowledge that they need to change like one iota. So I am going to get the people who are like, what else can I do? And they just want to keep changing them. And again, they're up against like a partner or a parent that there's just, it's just not possible for them to placate.
I see. So in some cases, people would approach you or come to you if they have reached an impasse, I would imagine, or not quite sure what next direction to take. And that's good to know. That's actually tremendous to know, because one thing you did mention that resonated with me is that, you know, the people that come to you, the people that you take, are the people who want to change. They want to make a difference. They want to not only change, but figure out where the change needs to be made. You know, it may not always lie on one person. You know, it may lie on in multiple people if it's a relational type of problem, it sounds like. So here on the Road to Rediscovery, we have four pillars to personal growth. And the first one, which is foundational, is self-awareness. So I want to ask you, Bronwyn, can you give us a glimpse into how, and if so, how much self-awareness is required, or that it involves for someone to have, you know, preliminary before approaching you for help?
Oh, that's a good question. So here's my take on that, Aubrey. Mm-hmm. I think we are all, and that includes me as a therapist, we are all blind to ourselves.
Yeah.
And we need other people to be our mirror. And a good therapist or a good friend will be a good mirror, a mirror that is not like distorted, not giving, reflecting back to you a distorted image of yourself, but a true reflection. And not all therapists are good mirrors whatsoever. I became a therapist because I could not find a good therapist.
Right.
And I desperately needed one. So unfortunately, that's not, just because you're going to therapy doesn't mean you're going to get that mirror.
Right.
That's something that you should seek out, though, and be very picky until you find one. But a good friend can be that person. But we are all blind to ourselves. So it is important. I'm a big advocate of taking time to reflect, just reflection.
Yes.
Not meditation, because meditation is kind of emptying our minds, more like just having kind of an open mind, not throwing everything out, you know, to empty it all the time, but just letting whatever comes in. And meditation would tell you, okay, now let it go through. And I would say, as for reflection, let it stay. And let yourself ponder or muse. Like the word muse, we don't really use anymore. It's like an old English word. But muse means to ponder, to contemplate. And ironically, the word amuse, as in amusement, means no pondering, no contemplation. So if we're being amused all the time, we are not reflecting. We're not able to see ourselves or have introspection or self-awareness. So I think that is really important, but I also think we need other people to be that mirror for us as well. It's a combination.
Understood. Yeah. Having a combination of the two, one area can help reveal some things that say the other can't, and vice versa. At least how it reads in my head. I tell you, I know we only scratched the surface, but from what I read in your bio and what we've talked about so far, you know, to me, I truly find it fascinating. And it's got to be, I don't want to say complicated, but it's got to be very tricky. And the reason why I say tricky, and maybe that's a poor choice of words, is because I'm thinking, and I want to ask you, in your experience, In trying to externalize someone's feelings that they're repressing, in the counseling work that you've done with the client, have you ever encountered someone, and I'm not saying they are maliciously or deceitfully trying to do this, but it's just a subconscious part of them that may have one feeling or emotion disguised behind another. Mm-hmm. And I want to give you an example.
Yeah.
The example is, let's say someone really truly exhibits anger. And it may be that anger is exhibited in a certain setting, or there's a certain trigger, right? When a person just brings up a topic, or another person, maybe an ex, you know, and it's whatever the case may be, it triggers that anger. And in your work with them, you discover that anger is really a mask covering fear that they have about something. Have you ever had an experience like that?
So I don't experience so much people's firsthand anger in therapy. However, I used to specialize in couples, and I would, it's crazy when you go from the individual who you see a certain way, and then they bring in their partner the next session, and you're like, oh wow, you're like a different person.
Yeah.
Not in the best way. So, anyway, so, but now I wouldn't say I see the anger, but I hear what you're saying. And Aubrey, you're onto something, because anger is actually always considered a secondary emotion. Mm. So we have primary emotions like fear. Right. Primary emotions can be sadness, happiness. And then here's the big one though, or there's like kind of big two that cause anger in my experience that are always under the anger.
Yes.
So there's always something under the anger. Mm-hmm. That's what I mean by secondary emotion.
Gotcha.
I think fear can be part of it, but I think if we're going to be really precise, what is under the anger is a feeling of perceived rejection.
Okay.
Or betrayal of some kind. And I say perceived because, you know, Aubrey, one thing I have learned in doing my own reflection on myself is that, like, I am very triggered by silence in the presence of other people. Like, I don't know if you can relate to that, but a lot of people can when I talk about it on my podcast, where I'm fine with silence by myself, but if I'm with you, like if you're silent, oh my God, I'm going to like,
really,
I'm going to ask you questions. I mean, I'm more aware of it now, so I don't do it as much, but you know, I honestly think that's what made me become a therapist in a way too, was like, I learned to ask good questions at a young age because I couldn't tolerate the silence.
I see.
Silence to me with another person feels what I think I've learned. It feels like I'm getting the cold shoulder. It feels like I'm getting the silent treatment,
yes,
which is a form of rejection. So again, that word perceived. So for me, silence is associated with perceived rejection. I know intellectually that Aubrey's just more quiet than I am or whatever, but young Bronwyn, who is very much alive and well, is feeling like she's just gotta, you know, fill in the blank space because it feels too familiar. It feels too painful. It brings her back to a very silent childhood and feeling very rejected. So now that's my response to that perceived rejection. But I had an incident with my daughter, who's now 20, about a year ago, where she was still living at home at the time. And I went downstairs into the kitchen for lunch, and she was in the kitchen at the same time.
Yeah.
She was silent. It was silent. And this is before I was so aware of my own trigger. So I start asking her questions because that's what I do. And she's my daughter and she's 19 and she's just not having it. She is just like, nah, I'm not going to answer your questions.
Yeah.
So I start getting angry.
Oh.
Yeah. And we get in like a full on fight. So that I have learned after reflecting back on that fight, like, oh, that's my trigger. And I am responsible for my trigger, not my daughter.
I see.
And so that's like a boundary. And that's a boundary I teach to all my clients and talk a lot about on my podcast too.
Yeah.
Is that we are only responsible for our feelings. We are never responsible for another person's feelings.
Right.
I am responsible to you, Aubrey, but I am not responsible for you. And that's a really big distinction. So if I'm triggered and mm-hmm. vice versa. So if I'm triggered by the silence,
right,
that's my responsibility. As much as I want it to be your responsibility, it's not. It's mm-hmm. always my responsibility to do the self-talk. Okay. It's quiet, Bronwyn. That's okay. Blah, blah, blah. Aubrey still likes you. Whatever that self-talk needs right. to be for myself. But yeah. that's my responsibility. And the fight that I had with my daughter is I was trying to offload my trigger onto her and expect her to be responsible for my feelings.
And thus the cycle begins, right? Action, well, reaction, I guess.
Yeah, right. In that case, yeah. but afterwards, yeah. after a couple hours, I reflected on it and I was like, oh my God, this is all because I'm triggered by silence. And that was actually the first time I realized just how triggering silence is to me and why.
Understood. You know, the beautiful thing about self-awareness, and you illustrated it so graciously, and admitting this, you know, of something yourself that you're working on. And I want to thank you for that. The beautiful thing about self-awareness is we can exercise it anytime, right? You gave an example of exercising it in the midst of the event, you know, realizing, okay, this is a trigger of mine. I'm responsible for, not my daughter. And then, you know, in retrospect, as self-reflection, right? It can't happen without self-awareness to the ability to reflect. And so you again, eloquently illustrated and described, you know, how you did that afterwards as well. So that's something I just wanted to kind of underscore for the listeners in terms of self-awareness and reflection and how self-awareness can be helpful and used at any time, before the event, during the event, after the event. Would you agree or have anything to add?
Yeah. So I learned the most retrospectively, which isn't how I'd like to learn it, but I have found that right. that works. So it takes like a posture of humility. Mm-hmm. It takes a posture mm-hmm. of humility of saying, you know what? Like you said earlier, we're human. I'm human. You're human. Humans learn through trial yeah. and error. Life is a learn by doing experience. Yes. Like, so I can make mistakes and I can reflect back and go, you know, I made a mistake and guess what? I'm learning from it. But if we shame ourselves, we go to a place of all bad, which is shame. We don't learn. We can't learn. It is it debilitates us. So shame has no positive function. It just causes us. And then, you know, we talked about people who will come see a therapist versus those who won't. Those who with tremendous shame will not see a therapist because they are certain that the therapist is going to shame them further and they're projecting that onto the therapist. So why would they go?
Right. That's their trigger. And like you said, they're projecting that onto the therapist. And thank you for touching on that, Bronwyn, because I wanted to talk about that next. two absolute toxic and poisonous elements and feelings, I believe in my heart of hearts, is shame and guilt. Mm. Self-inflicted feelings due to past events that may or may not even be within our control at the time that they happened or that we encountered them. Shame and guilt can be so incredibly damaging. I don't have to tell you that, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, I've learned over time that if not properly dealt with, it can even have a generational impact.
So how
can we teach our children to better gauge and manage guilt and shame better than we did when we were their age, because it can totally carry that toxicity from generation to generation.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's actually really easy. So we don't teach them like, hey, children, let's sit down and talk about shame. We teach them by, let's say I have my 5-year-old Johnny And I say, Johnny, I see how angry you are. And I don't blame you. I don't blame you because your sister just stole your toy again. Right. And I'd be angry too. Mm-hmm. But you can't bonk her on the head. That's not okay. Right. But you can be as angry as you want. And you can tell me how angry you are. And I don't blame you one bit. So when we validate their feelings, we name the feelings that they're having. Mm-hmm. When I say, when Johnny's 10 and he comes home and I say, Johnny, it sounds like you felt humiliated when your teacher called on you in front of the whole class like that.
Yeah.
So I'm naming what he's not saying, but I'm hearing with like just his story. So when we do that, when we listen, that starts with listening. That's
yes.
And then we really listen. We empathize. Empathy doesn't mean I'm feeling humiliated and I can relate to Johnny's humiliation. No, it means I'm leaving me. I'm imagining I'm him. I'm imagining how I would feel if the teacher did that to me.
Right.
And now I'm able to attune with those feelings. And so then I name them. I say, that must have felt humiliating. So by saying that, by naming the feelings, by listening, by paying attention to his feelings, I am teaching him without teaching, like didactically, I'm teaching him that he matters, that his feelings matter, that he's important. Mm-hmm. I'm teaching him that his feelings, even the angry ones, are not shameful. Then none of them are shameful. So he's learning, he's unlearning the shame or not learning the shame just by having one parent, even if it's just one parent or consistent adult presence in his life, who's just like, yeah, I don't blame you for being mad. Even with me, I don't blame you. You know, you kind of have a point. Like I was a little quick there to punish you, Johnny. So just being a humble, having that, you know, that posture of humility
and
really attuning to my children, they're not going to have shame.
Understood.
And especially if they see me apologize or if they see me say, you know, I didn't do the best job. So when I say that, when I say, I think I did make a mistake when I, you know, gave you a timeout, I think I was preemptive. I think I was too quick to punish or whatever. Mm. When I model that for them, just by saying that, they are learning, oh, humans make mistakes. Mistakes are normal. They're not shameful.
Yes. Yes. Oh my gosh. I'm sorry. I'm about to, I'm getting a little emotional here as you say that, because a couple things. For one, you're setting an example, right? And you are the example. Hey, look, I'm the parent, but I don't always get it right, you know. And you talk about humility, which, by the way, you know, is another one of the four cornerstones to personal growth, self-awareness, and humility. So thank you for pointing that out. But as soon as you mentioned that, you know, in the example, saying, hey, Johnny, I may have given you time out too early instead of listening to your fully explain and so forth. It made me think of, I can't believe I'm going to mention this, but it made me think of, let's see, my son, who's now 25 or 26, he just turned 26. When in my first marriage, he lived with me from 5 to adulthood. And so, you know, on the weekends, every other weekend, he would go with his mother and I would take him. So when he was like 6 years old, one time, it was a Friday and it was his weekend to go to his mother's, and I would drive him to his mother's. And you know, I just quickly say this, that Friday happened to be progress report time, when the teachers would bring, would enclose a progress report with the student, you know, and then, you know, child comes home, shows you the progress report. And I saw, you know, a couple areas, you know, there were some good areas and then there were some other questionable areas. Mm-hmm. And so we got in the car, we took that 25 minute drive to his mother's, and I am just hammering into him about, you know, this and everything. And so then I, you know, walk him in the house, tell his mother, and then, you know, I said, I'll see you on Sunday, and then I leave. Mm-hmm. And I drive back, and that weekend I'm at home and I'm thinking to myself, my goodness, Aubrey, what have you done? What have you done? I mean, I felt horrible. And the reason why I felt horrible, Bronwyn, is because, you know, he was looking forward to seeing his mother and having a good weekend, spending time with his mother. I just yammered into him over and over and over again, making him feel less and less and less and down and down and down, you know, going into the weekend, you know, where he could have, I'm not saying he was bummed out the whole weekend, but I set that precedence, you know, of him just being bummed out all weekend, not being in good spirits to spend time with his mom on that weekend, you know, and then, so that Sunday when I went there to pick him up, I had to, I apologized to her and I apologized to him. I said, you know, I want you to be in the best mood and I know you're looking forward to spending time with your mom and I don't want to, you know, have you start your weekend feeling down because I, you know, I laid into you on your progress report. I'm sorry. I should not have done that. That's a bad way to set your child up when seeing their other parent. And so, you know, I said, you know, we'll deal with your progress report, but I should not have done that. And that's the emotional part of me that I messed up. And I acknowledge that in front of him, in front of her. And as you were explaining that in your example with Johnny, it made me, think it took me back to that time, over 20 years ago or 20 years ago. So thank you for that, by the way.
Yeah.
and I'm sorry to kind of go off track.
No, a little bit. I love it. I'd love to hear that.
Oh, well, thank you. I wanted to know, do you or have you with your clients ever seen any nonverbals from a behavioral standpoint, any nonverbals that kind of supports the emotion or the feelings that they're exhibiting that you try to, I don't know, exercise or bring out?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, I'm trying to think about all the nonverbal. I mean, there's so many, but
yeah.
So I would say what I'm focusing on now and where I've come to right now is just, and what is so incredible to me is how much our feelings are in our bodies. I mean, feelings are invisible. So we think, oh, anger is invisible. I don't have anger, I don't know. I guess it's gone, but it's just because it's invisible. I like to say anger is as real as this computer, this laptop that we're talking on, as real as the chair I'm on. It is more real. It is more real and it does not dissipate into the ether. It stores up in our bodies. It really, really does. And not just anger, shame.
Yes.
Hatred. And so I will ask a client when they say something that I really think they're having a lot of feelings about, I'll say, what are you feeling in your body right now?
Right.
And it's so incredible because I'm learning as I go, but a lot of them, they'll say the anger, certain anger seems to be in the chest, but then other anger, and then they'll feel it like sometimes in their arms, their hands, their legs, but a lot of it is in the like stomach area, the gut.
Yeah.
And I've come to realize that is like hatred, disgust, and shame. And, you know, I'm not sure those three things are different. I think that shame is a type of self-contempt, self-hatred, or self-disgust. Yeah. Uh-huh. And sometimes it's just disgust of the other person. And sometimes it's disgust of the other person. But when you're a child, we turn that disgust inward on us and we feel shame instead of knowing that the parent, because we have zero objectivity as a child. We have zero objectivity to say, you know, my dad is behaving in such a shameful way. So as a child, we internalize our disgust of the way dad's acting and we carry it around in us and we think we're shameful. Or as a child, you know, so the example I gave of the silent treatment, just feeling like I didn't matter at all.
Right.
As a child.
Yeah.
I didn't have the objectivity for to go, you know, my mom is like a really sick person who like doesn't ever engage me. And that's really not healthy or normal or good.
Right.
I didn't have that objectivity. So I, you know, took it as like, I'm worthy of rejection. I'm not lovable. Right. And that's what children do. So they carry it around in their bodies. And, you know, Freud said it so well. He said, depression is anger turned inward. And that's exactly true. Mm-hmm. Anxiety, by the way, is also anger turned inward. Mania is anger turned inward. Panic is anger turned inward. Psychosis is anger turned inward. It's all anger that we hold on in our bodies because we don't feel entitled or self-aware to say, you know, that's just really wrong.
Yeah.
That's just really effing wrong.
Yeah, no, and for sure.
So when when people come to therapy, I'm the mirror going, you know, that was really effing wrong. And they're like, wow, I've been waiting my whole life, I think, to hear that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, I mean, if it's received that way, you know, and not in a with an air of denial.
Well, I'm saying it to my client about how they were treated.
How they were treated. I'm sorry, not how they responded, but how they were treated. Okay, gotcha. Yeah. And they have been waiting for so long to hear that. And that validates, right? How they were feeling. And wanted to also get your take on I don't know if this is two sides of the same coin, two types of anger, or if it's just all anger. Okay. You have people who are carrying around deep-rooted anger that may have been sourced from a childhood experience, an abusive parent or an abusive upbringing. And then you have I don't want to say an ordinary person, but you have a person who didn't experience that growing up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes we, as I call, lose our cool occasionally. Mm-hmm. You know, blow up over something. And I'm going to give you my example. Okay. I always try to just keep a very calm demeanor, very optimistic, and try to have a healthy outlook on things as they come, whether it's good or bad, fortunate or unfortunate. Okay. If something happens, like, let's see, my dog. Oh, she's not here anymore. Okay. Well, my dog, for instance, you know, she has really frustrated me at times, especially in her early years.
Yeah.
And I've lost my cool with her a couple times now, you know, never abused her, just really lost my cool and raised my voice, you know, and had some intensity behind that. Now, you know, shortly after doing that, it's like dogs are so smart. I mean, you know, she just has this look on her face and she stays out of my way and she just goes in the other room. If she sees me walk in the room, she goes into a different room and she's just quiet the whole time. And even without her exhibiting that as a response to me, which I feel, I still feel this guilt. Guilt sets in after the anger because I yelled at her like that. Yeah. Okay. Whether she responded in, you know, in a way where she felt down because I was unhappy with her or not, I feel guilty because I always try to keep a calm demeanor. And all this leads to a question, believe me. This leads to my question. If you can give us a healthy example, an example of a healthy perspective or outlook that we should have with it.
Yeah, Aubrey, honestly, I'm not sure you have realistic expectations of yourself. I really am not.
Okay.
Because we live on planet Earth and the real and the ideal are very disparate most of the time. And it's okay when things go awry, when reality is far from the ideal. It's okay to get angry. I don't think raising a voice at a dog or a person is a bad thing whatsoever. I think it's really the content of what we say. So I'll give you an example of how I interacted with my cat a few weeks ago, actually. And at the time I thought, you know, I wish I knew this when my daughter was little, because I would have felt more free. Because I think then when my voice did get loud with my daughter, I felt the same way. I felt guilty. Like, I'm not allowed to be human. I need to be some kind of perfect robot mom. So, but this is what I do with my cat. And this is what I would recommend. So my cat came up to, she's not supposed to be in my bedroom where I do all my work.
Right.
And I let her in. I kind of gave her an exception this one time. And of course she like plows into one of my house plants and knocks it over. And I had just knocked that same plant over like a week before. And then my husband had just knocked it over like a day or two before. So I was like, oh my gosh.
So
what I did, and this came naturally now, but it took a long time for me to get to where I am.
Yeah.
So her name is Tia, my cat. Okay. So she knocks it over and I just say really loud. I go, Tia, I am so angry right now. I'm angry with you. You knocked over this plant again. It's the third time.
Yeah.
Week, but I'm angry at me because I shouldn't have let you up here in the first place. And I am so frustrated. I am so tired of cleaning up this plant. And I wonder if the plant's even going to live. And that's okay. That's just what I said.
Okay.
And how I said it. And, you know, I felt so relieved after that because I did not hold all my anger in. I was responsible with it. I channeled it out into my
very responsible. Yeah.
But I did not attack my cat's character. Obviously, this was a person. This is where I would regret it. I would feel very guilty and regret attacking, saying something like, you know, really mean and cruel. I didn't say anything mean and cruel. I said, I'm angry. And I listed every reason why. Some of that was her. A lot of it wasn't.
Yeah.
And I just thought, oh my God, if I had to do over being a mom to a young child, that's what I would do now. Because I didn't know that then, that that's okay. And that's actually probably the closest to ideal you can get. And what I did back then is I held it all inside and then I would like scream at times, as I know I'm the only parent of a young child to do.
Right.
So is that preferable? Heck no, that is not a preferable thing to do. So I think, you know, I want to give you permission, Aubrey, let your voice get loud. I think what matters is that you're not attacking someone with your words. I really do. I you know, loud voices can be triggering and scary, but they're pretty innocuous overall.
Yeah, nah, for sure. They truly are. And I love that recommendation. I particularly love how that, it's not a tirade, but it's an expressive event. Right. It's an expressive response. Your expressive response was not targeted 100% directly at Tia. Mm-mm. Right. You claim responsibility. That's a responsible response. So, yes, I love that recommendation. I'm going to take that to heart. I really am, because, you know, I don't really try to be intentionally malicious. And I try real hard not to be malicious in, you know, in a vocal raised voice response. It's but it is directed 100%. And I think, you know, I need to be a little more responsible with that. And as you said, give myself permission. So I asked you that question in a selfish way, but you know, I'm truly hoping in my heart of hearts that the listeners, some listeners can relate to that when it comes to interacting with either their pets, their children, or their spouse.
Let me give you another example that I think might help as well.
Okay.
So remember, I am responsible for my feelings.
Yes.
And I have found that by articulating them into words in the present moment is the most responsible thing I can do. So I did that for myself. I felt so much better. I immediately like was calm after that.
Great.
So let me give you an example. My husband and I just went out of town last weekend.
Yeah.
We had decided we were going to clean the house before we leave, and we wanted to leave pretty early. And we were on the same page with that. So it's in the morning. I'm cleaning. He was on the computer reading the paper. And I said, so we're going to clean right now, right? And he goes, oh, yeah, just let me wrap this up. Well, give me a few minutes. It had been a few minutes, and I'm still cleaning, and he's still on his computer.
Reading.
So this is what I said. I said, Steve, I'm starting to feel resentful because you said you'd be cleaning and you're still on the computer.
Yeah.
That's what I said. I was exactly honest with what was happening with me right then. I was starting to feel resentful. I didn't say, I'm resentful as hell. I said, I'm starting to feel resentful. And he goes, got it. And he shut his computer and he started cleaning. And that was me being responsible for my feelings, not being ashamed. Oh, it's not okay to be resentful. Yeah, it is. My resentment is telling me something's wrong, and I'm going to articulate it. And he is a safe person that I can do that with, right? Not everyone is a safe person that that we can be authentic with like that. But my husband is a safe person to do that with, and it worked.
Yeah. And he knows he's a safe person you can do that with.
But it's not fair to either one of us if I'm like, oh, be resentful. No. So I'm going to stuff it. And then 20 minutes later, I'm going to blow up. I'm gonna be passive aggressive.
Yeah.
So we finally get in the car to leave for the weekend. And I'm like, not talking, and I'm being a jerk. Okay. So neither one of those is
fair. Not productive. No, it's not fair.
It's not fair.
No. And you knowing he's a safe person to do this with, and him knowing that, and knowing that, you can express this to him because he will take it in the right way and respond in the right way. That's healthy, you know? Yeah. So I do want to thank you for sharing that. Now, Bronwyn, you have masters in counseling and nutrition. This is a weird question, but it made me wonder, can our intake of nutrition, or let's say lack of nutrition, have an impact on our repressed feelings of the things we've been talking about, anger, shame, depression?
That's a good question. So Aubrey, I would say, I would used to be a big believer in that in the past, and I'm now coming to the point where I think it's the opposite. So a lot of therapists, I kind of alluded that a lot of therapists aren't very good at what they do, unfortunately. A lot of therapists believe, you need to change your diet, and that's going to help, your moods, whatever. I think helping you externalize finally at long last the anger that's inside you, the suppressed anger, and learn how to channel it in healthy ways, such as boundaries and assertiveness. When I see people get healthy in those ways, they will naturally come back to me like a few sessions later and be like, oh, guess what? I'm starting to shop at the farmer's market, and I'm cooking at home, and I'm like, all these healthy recipes, or I'm exercising. I'm like, well, okay. So I think we're putting the cart before the horse. I think feeling better needs to be the first step. And that is by us channeling our anger out of our bodies in healthy ways, learning to have a healthy relationship with our anger, which is a healthy relationship with ourselves. And once we do that, we naturally want to self-nurture, which is what a good diet is. It's a natural way to want to self-nurture and care for our body. And that comes pretty naturally.
Yeah. Man, I'm glad you articulated it that way, because I started thinking of, let's say emotional eating. When someone's depressed, the last thing they're thinking about is eating healthy. I mean, they're like, give me 5 large pizzas. I want a couple cheeseburgers, or, Let me run to Taco Bell, or let me get this dozen donuts or something, you know. But managing those feelings, not through junk food, but managing feelings through work and counseling, puts them in a better place to where, you know, emotionally they're stable, you know, and in a state of mind to where now they want to focus on that nurturing side from a nutrition food intake perspective. So it's the other way around. Makes so much sense. Much sense. So Bronwyn, can you tell us about your podcast? It's called Angry at the Right Things. Is that right?
Yes. Angry at the Right Things. It is found wherever you subscribe to your podcast. And I talk a lot about everything we touched on today. I give a lot of my own stories of my own life, my experience with major depressive disorder, as well as like repairing my relationship with my daughter, which just happened over the last year. Just examples of how to do this weird thing called life, how to be responsible for our feelings, and also who is a safe person and who's not, and how to discern that. Because we don't want to throw our pearls before swine. We don't want to open up and try to accommodate someone who is wanting us to feel responsible for their feelings, because we're not. And that's going to make us sick. That is going to make us sick if we try to be. So, and guilty. So I talk about all these things, and my goal is just to get it out to people who aren't my clients, to help people who might never see me as a therapist, but as many people as possible to kind of reorient their relationship with themselves. And that's really the key to healing, is learning to self-attune to heal our relationship with ourselves.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Because on the other side of that, we can have an improved quality of life that we may not have even ever fathomed. You know, that's one of the beautiful things about self-realization, self-awareness, transformation, and all those different things, you know, that we can do to work on ourselves, also with the help of proper counseling. So that sounds like a great podcast. I'm going to subscribe to it. And you've alluded to where we can find your podcast, but you know, how else can the listeners follow you and learn more about your great work?
Yeah, well, right now it's mainly my podcast. I recently made a Facebook page. It's Angry at the Right Things as well. I haven't really done a lot with that, but all my podcasts and then my videos, the last four podcasts I actually have on video. Those are on YouTube. They're on my Facebook page. And then I have a video on YouTube of, and I think it's on my Facebook page too, of just a parenting. I do parenting talks for parents of young children. So.
Oh, great. Fantastic. All right. Well, if you don't mind, I'd love to put your Facebook page link, your YouTube link, channel link, in the episode show notes, so the listeners can subscribe to your podcast, watch some of your parenting tutorials, as well as learn more about the great work you're doing. Bronwyn Weigert. Remember the name, everyone. Bronwyn, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show and giving us some great insights on how we can lean in and become truly healthy with the feelings that, you know, that we have as human beings.
Thank you, Aubrey.
Absolutely. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening. And, you know, we feel like this at many, many times, you know, in our struggles, in the midst of our struggles, that we're alone, right? And there's no hope. But I'm here to tell you, you know, in our daily struggles, you aren't alone. And hope is always around the corner. I humbly ask that you please share this show with someone you know needing motivation and support. We're all roadies on this journey of life. Yeah. And it sure feels good having you on the road with me. Thanks again for listening. We'll chat again soon.
We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Roads Rediscovery. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadsrediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have.